Good afternoon, everybody. Thanks for joining us. My name is Mike Gibb. I run accountsrecovery.net, and I am very excited to be moderating today's webinar on the evolution of the compliance officer role in collections. Compliance has become the most important component of running a successful collections operation. Companies devote a significant chunk of their resources to making sure they're compliant, but compliance has evolved throughout the years. The responsibilities of compliance officers have evolved too, and will continue to do so as the CFPB works on a rule for the collections industry. Today, we are very lucky to be hearing from an esteemed panel of compliance officers. They'll discuss how their jobs are changing and how collection agencies can structure their companies and their compliance officer responsibilities to stay on top of what's important. This webinar is being generously sponsored by PDC Flow. You'll get the chance to hear more about them a little later in our program. I want to take a quick minute and say a few words about accountsrecovery.net. Accountsrecovery.net is a news and information platform for the ARM industry. The site publishes unique and curated content, maintains a number of email newsletters, hosts webinars like this one, and offers a number of exciting podcasts for the ARM industry. The site is free for anyone to use and is a great resource of news and insights to help educate and inform. I hope everyone will spend a few minutes every day checking out what it's got to offer. Now let me tell you a little bit about today's speakers. Tim Collins is the Chief Compliance Officer at True Accord. Prior to joining True Accord, Tim worked at Convergent as its General Counsel and Chief Ethics and Compliance Officer. He has more than 20 years of experience in the accounts receivable management industry, including firsthand experience in litigating cases. He's serving on ACA International's Federal Affairs Committee and is a past chair of ACA International's MAP Committee. Michael Clutho is a shareholder with the Minneapolis law firm of Bassford Remley. A significant part of his practice involves the defense of collection attorneys and collection agencies facing FDCPA, FCRA, and TCPA lawsuits. Michael has defended thousands of consumer lawsuits brought against collection professionals. His practice in this area also includes the defense of claims brought by government regulators overseeing entities involved in the credit and collection industry and risk management, audit, and advice. Michael chairs the firm's Consumer Law Defense Practice Group. He frequently presents on FDCPA, FCRA, TCPA, and related issues, and is a certified instructor through ACA International. Laura Knights is the Chief Compliance Officer at Gulf Coast Collection Bureau. She has worked at the agency since July 2017. She has been in the collection industry for 7 years and is a licensed attorney in Rhode Island, Massachusetts, and Florida. She holds a credit and collection compliance attorney and credit and collection compliance officer designations from ACA International. Jed Peek is responsible for the creation, implementation, and continual oversight of the enterprise-wide compliance management system at the Frost Arnett Company. In this role, he ensures that the compliance program aligns with the overall corporate strategy, business plan, and code of ethics at Frost Arnett. Judd also oversees multiple compliance information tracking and monitoring systems. Prior to his role as Chief Compliance Officer, Judd spent 16 years as an attorney in private practice, specializing in employee relations issues. The format for today's webinar will be a panel discussion. We encourage everybody to submit questions and we'll get to them as the discussion is ongoing and once the discussion has concluded. To submit a question, please enter it into the question tab on your Zoom webinar control panel. This event is being recorded, and a recording will be made available in the coming days on accountsrecovery.net. Finally, I wanted to ask everybody to take a minute and fill out the survey that should pop up on your screen today when the webinar is over. You'll also receive an email tomorrow with a link to access the survey. Your participation helps make sure that the topics like the one we have today are the ones you want to hear from, and the speakers, like the ones we have today, are the people you want to hear from. So with that, let's begin today's discussion. And first, since we're talking about compliance, usually I like to sort of start with a very basic question and have each of the panels sort of define what they mean by compliance or what they consider to be compliant. And maybe they can add a little bit of color in if that definition has changed in the past year or few years and how that definition has changed. Tim, why don't we start with you?
Yeah, thanks, Mike, and thanks to PDC Flow for having us and the fellow speakers. It's really a privilege and honor to be here to be talking about this evolution that we've seen in compliance. when I look at compliance and I think about what compliance is, you know, I did a little research on a definition and some, they're all across the board, but one of them is compliance is either a state of being in accordance with established guidelines or specifications or the process of becoming so. And the definition of compliance can also encompass efforts to ensure that organizations are abiding by both industry regulations and government legislation. So if we really think about compliance, it's been around for a long time. We've been doing things compliantly, but it wasn't as formalized in this industry as it has been over the last, well, basically since the beginning of the CFPB when they took over the jurisdiction of the FDCPA. And at that time it was, we were doing things in a compliant fashion. Nobody had them written down. And today all that, most of whatever we do is written down and it's required to be written down. And we see that in our policies and procedures. So for me, it's that state of being and following those policies and procedures and making sure that you're following those policies and procedures. And those are really driven by our clients and by our, you know, regulations that we're required to follow. I'll stop there to give somebody else on the panel an opportunity to speak on their thoughts on what compliance is.
I'll go next. I think I agree with him, and I also would just add that for me, in my experience and my role, it's also about changing or forming behaviors within your company to make sure that people understand why we need them to say certain things or do certain things or not do certain things. And as he also said, it's very, very, very important to have them written, just because you're following the procedure. If you don't have it in writing, it's really hard to defend a claim against you nowadays.
So this is Judd. I'll just kind of piggyback on what Laura and Tim have already mentioned. And I do think for our industry, you know, compliance programs, compliance initiatives, it's majority regulatory compliance. So we're a heavily regulated industry. We have lots of laws, regulations, rulemaking on the federal and state level that we have to adhere to. And to me, it's, you know, it's probably 80% regulatory compliance, making sure that we're not going to do something that's going to get us in trouble with regulators or with the law or open us up to litigation. I think that's kind of different than most other industries. So a lot of industries have compliance initiatives and compliance programs, and they're geared more so towards the corporate compliance side, where there's a cultural and ethical basis for a compliance program. I think we have that, but to me, it's not as pervasive as some other industries. And that's just because I think that's the fallout of being a heavily regulated industry. We have to deal with all these different, you know, the alphabet soups of acronyms and all the different statutes that we have to adhere to. I do think, and we'll get into this later in the webinar, but, you know, crystal balling and looking forward to where compliance programs in the credit collections industry is headed, I think there will be a shift back towards that more corporate compliance side, where we're looking at the company's culture, we're looking at ethical workforces, doing the right thing, and internal standards and practices, and looking at client standards and practices, all those non-legal or non-regulatory influences that have to be adhered to as well.
Yeah, as Michael Kluth, though, and just a couple of things to add on, there's an adage out there that he who forgets the past is doomed to repeat it. Mm-hmm. My role is outside counsel. I help a number of agencies with defensive lawsuits and also risk management. So my job, as I view it, is to help agencies learn from others' mistakes or alleged mistakes, incorporate those into policies and procedures that are then designed to avoid them making the same mistake so that they can avoid having to hire a lawyer and defend themselves. It's a lot easier, obviously, to work on compliance and getting procedures in place so that you don't find yourself named in a lawsuit than it is defending and learning the hard way. So that's the goal of all compliance, is to identify the risks, incorporate policies, procedures, training to avoid those risks and lessen those risks so that you can sleep better at night.
Yeah, and I think Michael makes a great point there about the risks and that focus on risk. And that's sort of what's driven the change in this space from compliance. You know, a lot of times early on, we were governed by the FDCPA. Most of that was you know, case law driven. There wasn't a lot of FTC action around that piece. And then the CFPB comes on board and the risk model changed dramatically overnight. And we saw a significant change in the role of a chief compliance officer and documentation and becoming CFPB exam ready and all of those things. And that led to that evolution of compliance and going from focused on FDCPA and client requirements to really being focused on this regulatory pieces. And as the states have stepped up in this space, we continue to see that grow. But I think Judd makes a great point because people ask, well, where is compliance going to go? And it's part of its evolution, and we've seen it in other industries, to his point, is that eventually, you know, you become very familiar with the regulations. You've got your policies and procedures. You're as bulletproof as you can be from a litigation point. But eventually, it's got to evolve to this ethical level where it's how do you instill that people make the right decisions at the right moments? Because you can't have a policy to cover everything. You can't document everything you do and say, and make it as black and white as you possibly can. It just doesn't exist in the world that we live in. And that's really where that evolution, I think, in the future of compliance in this space is you're going to see more of an ethical requirement. And so just because that's what other industries have gone to, and I think it's a matter of time ours will be going to that space. But in the meantime, we'll see other hot button compliance issues come up, like privacy, that we'll all have to focus on. It's never dull on the compliance side, that's for sure.
Excellent. Well, let me jump in here for a minute. I apologize. I think there are some technical difficulties, and either all of you or some of you might not be seeing the presentation on the screen right now. And if that's the case, I apologize. I'm trying to figure that out and get that fixed. You aren't really missing anything pertinent to the discussion that we're having. You are missing pictures and bios of our speakers and some great information on the sponsor. So I am going to work to try and get that going as quickly as I can. But in the meantime, I want to continue with the discussion and kind of keep things moving forward. I'm curious, certainly from the inside counsel, Michael, I'm sure you can share, you know, maybe what you've seen from the outside. What's been the biggest change in the compliance officer's job during the past few years? And you know, maybe look at it from the perspective of, are you spending more or less time on different tasks? Judd, you want to take that one first?
Sure, I'd be happy to. Looking at how it's changed in the last few years and where a compliance officer's focus has gone. Well, it definitely has. And if you go back 5, 6, 7 years ago, Tim alluded to it earlier, you know, the primary focus and primary, there's a big gap between 1 and 2 was on the CFPB readiness. So I came into my position at Frost Arnett as get us CFPB ready. And that was the mandate. And that was my, you know, task 1, 2, 3 and priorities go. And I think at the time, the fear was every agency would undergo a CFPB audit or investigation at some point, and you needed to get ready because the CFPB could put agencies out of business. And that was, a prevailing mindset. And I think we've really moved beyond that. We don't have, here's your blueprint, do these 3 things or these 5 things or however many it is, and you're good to go. Agencies have moved beyond that in that infrastructure building stage to more of a cultural integration and maturation of a compliance program. Myself, you know, we came in and, you know, we built our compliance program, a lot of it from scratch, and I think we're in a good place now. So there's less of a building mentality as far as the CMS goes or a compliance program goes. And, you know, my focus is starting to shift towards that risk management, that risk mitigation, looking at other types of litigation risk and also the data privacy, the cyber risk. You know, we all deal with electronic records and private information, and you know, our business is information. That's what it ultimately is. And that's valuable information to a lot of people, and we're never going to get away from the risk of data breaches, of of unauthorized disclosures, anything like that. And the stakes are just going to go up and up. So I think that mitigation and management of that risk is going to become a paramount role within compliance.
Does anybody else want to jump in and talk about how their role or how their responsibilities have changed?
I actually experienced the same thing because our company focuses mostly on medical and medical accounts. So the data breaches regarding their personal health care information has become important. Our company is expanding. So one of the biggest changes over the last 2 years was training for me, implementing training programs to make sure people had gone through the HIPAA training and knew what they could and couldn't talk about. And I also noticed a little more emphasis on discrimination and harassment. Like, what exactly does that mean? And that gets back to how maybe things are changing more towards the company culture. So we wanted to protect ourselves to make sure that it was clearly defined, especially with the Me Too thing that came out. We wanted to make sure our employees understood what exactly these things mean. And I found over the last 2 years, the more time I spent training, the less time I spent on pre-suits and lawsuits. It was like a career high for me was last year. We went 5 months without a single pre-suit or lawsuit. And that was pretty cool. But the more, it was a lot of work in getting the employees trained. But now, I really feel confident in our collectors, and I know they know what they should and shouldn't be doing. And if, someone's having an issue, we try to train them and, explain to them why, you need to be doing this. And that to me has been the biggest time saver on other things. And it also has saved the company money on litigation and settlement.
That's fantastic to be able to hear the savings there. And I'm sure Michael Clutho's got a few things to add to that piece. I would just say, for me, I think one of the biggest changes has been, from my first CFPB exam, it was really show us what you do and how you do it, to the second CFPB exam that I went through, which included, okay, show us how you know that that's exactly what you're doing. Right. So you really had to start to build your own testing and monitoring, especially the crucial, how do you know you're not calling a consumer too many times on a phone number because you have multiple accounts with them and they're in different portfolios, maybe being worked in different offices, that could, to Laura's point, start to look like a harassment kind of situation. So it really came down to how do we test and how do we use the data that Judd was talking about in a way that we can use it for compliance purposes, not just for operational purposes. So I think that's been one of the biggest shifts that I've seen is building those programs. And it's gone from having great, technical writers on your team to having data analytics folks on your team that can start to be able to pull that reporting for you so that you could easily produce it when the CFPB requests it or a state regulator requests it or, even in a worst case situation, you get a lawsuit on it. And so maybe I'll kick it over there at that point to Michael to see if he's got some insights on how it's going to change and what it does on the litigation front.
Yeah, thanks. I like to throw out some adages, just kind of things to think about. There's death by a thousand cuts. There's whack-a-mole. That's the vast majority of the lawsuits that are brought in this area, just kind of background noise. It doesn't necessarily make you folks feel, any better about it, but it's better to be on a kind of a nominal type of ticky-tack claim than on the end of a class action that could potentially put you out of business. So that's the kind of the positive. But what happens is we all get inundated daily with these broadcasts and blasts, and they're good and it's helpful to be reading this, but you try and figure out as a compliance officer, what can I take away from this? What does it really mean as far as our policies, our procedures, the way we do business? Do we need to make some changes? And one thing that I wanted to bring to our discussion is we had the Great Lakes Creditor and Collectors Association had a strategic planning retreat last week, and I'm the incoming president. elect. And so, you know, I kind of hosted it. And one of the takeaways from our retreat, and I wasn't really aware of this, but, you know, Harry Strausser was there. Harry, you know, runs the management side of our unit. And he indicated that more than 50%, more than half of all members at ACA are 11 employees or less agencies. So that's an incredible statistic. And what we had there was one of the gentlemen that was with us. There were five folks in his agency, and he talked about, you know, how hard it is to wear that compliance hat when you're wearing, you know, 20 other hats on top of it. And so, you know, this is a kind of obviously a good forum for us to talk about issues and get some things out there to think about. But one of the takeaways we had from all of that is the smaller you are, the harder it is, because you're torn in so many ways. But to try and find, whether it's a benchmarking group that you can link up with similarly situated folks, or you can bounce ideas off of, a mentor, almost a compliance mentor, work and get yourself in tight with, you know, outside counsel who can serve as that role of keeping track of what's going on and knowing your business so that you can be helped to, if you will, implement changes as necessary.
You know, this is Judd, and I've had a couple of thoughts. I just wanted to kind of follow up on what the other panelists mentioned. I think I heard kind of a common thread being, as we see compliance responsibilities and the role of a compliance officer shifting, it's to me, it's taking on a lot of different expertise requirements outside of just collections law. So, you know, it, and I think Laura mentioned, you know, an employment law claim and making sure that you're training on harassment issues. And that's so true. The consumer, you know, single consumer litigation, these are small dollar claims. And one employment discrimination lawsuit is going to vastly dwarf the combined consumer law litigation that your company may have over a year. I really think that a compliance officer to serve an organization well going forward really needs to become a business partner in things outside of just FDCPA or Fair Credit Reporting Act or those strictly you know, credit and collections regulations. They're going to have to partner in a lot of different ways and provide advice and counsel and expertise in a lot of different areas.
Yeah, and I think that's a great, great point, Judge, because in the old days, I think if you were a certain size, you had a general counsel, and we didn't see chief compliance officers. You saw there was somebody who was mainly focused there helping you with your client contracts, handling lawsuits internally before sending them to outside counsel, those kind of things. And that person had to be a generalist and a jack of all trades. And a lot of us made that transition. I was one of them, from strictly a general counsel over to the compliance side of the business, because I think that was where the real excitement was going to come from, especially with the CFPB. Excitement might not be the right word there. But it really begs the question, you know, getting back to Michael's point, it's like, how do you decide what you need? You know, so do you need a chief compliance officer, or because you're small enough, you have to wear multiple hats? And then that being the case, if you're a small enough agency, what would you focus on? So for the audience members that are out there that maybe don't have a chief compliance officer, maybe not at that size yet, but what are some of the things that they should be looking at and then could possibly do to address some of those things? Maybe that'd be a great question for this group to kind of ponder and share their thoughts on. Laura, do you have anything on that?
I do, actually, because when I started, Gulf Coast was a much smaller company. And I, like you said, I did have to wear a lot of different hats and learn a lot of things, because I had come from up in Rhode Island. I was I ran an office for a national debt collector, and you know, it was a whole different business. I had to learn the medical side as well. But what I definitely would suggest is get your managers, get the owner of the company, establish policies and procedures in writing. Like, make sure you have basic stuff about the FDCPA, the FCCPA, or whatever your state law is, the FCRA. Make sure you have something in writing, a policy and a procedure, work instructions, start doing that. And And I also would make sure that you are doing trainings and log them. Make sure you have a log of, yes, we trained these three employees today who started with our company on FDCPA, on FCCPA. The logging is very important because I forget who mentioned it, but you know, if the CFPB does come in or some regulatory body does come in, how do you prove what you that you are doing what you say you're doing? So without the log of the trainings, they don't know that these employees definitely received this because you're just saying it. But when you have a log, I had to, you know, I have to log all the trainings, and I also work closely with the director of operations. So I would suggest stuff like that, like making sure like the managers are really involved and the written and the written requirements. So everybody has access to the policies and procedures as well. So if your company does, if you have them, but your employees don't have access to them, that's also an issue. So, you know, maybe print out a handbook or a policy and procedure book and have like a couple copies. And then, like I said, the training logs, those were like the big things that I did in the beginning.
Yeah, great suggestions. The CFPB has actually got a examination manual compliance management review. It's 19 pages total. Even if you're not governed by the CFPB, it's a great place to start from, because it talks about those basics that you just mentioned, Laura, the policies and procedures, training, how could you do some auditing, those kind of things. And then really a big element in there is how do you handle customer complaints, and that can include litigation at times. So I think those things are important. What about maybe Michael or Judd, things about where you can go, how can you find the resources that you could need if you're a smaller agency? Where could you go? I know that I think somebody mentioned benchmarking and finding a strong mentor helps, but what are those things, and how would you go about doing that?
This is Michael, and I'll give you a couple of thoughts. One is ACA does have its search points. I think those are fabulous, and they update them. So at a minimum, I would start there and find those search points that apply to you and then work off of those. They usually have a case or two that will show you a win or a loss, and you can look at those to see what worked, what didn't work, and you can kind of work off of that. That's kind of the policy and procedure thing. But here's what I see for our clients is there's a void, especially the smaller the agency gets, but even larger agencies, they just need somebody to bounce something off of. We're thinking about doing this. A client wants us to do this. It doesn't quite feel right. And they want to have, you know, someone who's kind of in the trenches that does this, that can say, yep, no, that's low risk, you should go for it, or that's really high risk, you know, run from it, or it's low risk, but if it does pop and you do get called on it, it has very high exposure. But it's that type of resource that I think is, you know, vitally important. The smaller the agency is, the more hats that a compliance officer is wearing. So what we've done is we have set up retention agreements with a number of clients where it's just built into their budget, you know, X amount per month. And for that, they can call anytime. They can send pre-suit demands. We triage lawsuits. We negotiate resolutions. We make cases go away. If it gets to where an answer is required, that's a different deal. But that way we're able to, we do letter reviews. We do on-site, almost CFPB type audits. But that's something that you can then use someone who, you know, you find the right person who can do that for you. And it helps you sleep better at night. And my experience, our experience has been that those folks that are utilizing that have a much lower frequency of getting sued. It works.
Yeah, when we're talking about kind of making, you know, stretching your dollar and getting the most out of limited resources, I think there is kind of a distinction between large market participants who those are the agencies. I think you're going to be expected to have a professional, robust, mature compliance program. And you're going to have somebody whose primary duty may not be their only duty, but their primary responsibility has to be compliance. That's what they are hired to do. and that's what they are measured against. For smaller companies, for smaller agencies, they might not have somebody in that role. That may be, I think all agencies at every level need to have that role, but it may not be a full-time employee necessarily doing it. And for the smaller ones, you need to look at, and I'll give a plug for accountsrecovery.net. It's a free news service, and I get a daily newsletter that's great and keeps me abreast of changes or developments or newsworthy items from a compliance perspective. And there are other things that out there that are free or relatively cheap that you really can tap into. And what Michael had mentioned before, the networking, the peer grouping, and getting that system of peers in place, I think it's really critical at every stage of the organization, whether you're an LMP or you're a small entity. Just being able to have a sounding board, essentially. Most companies only have one chief compliance officer. When I was in private practice in a law firm, I was a member of a large department of people that practice the same practice area I did. And anytime I had a question, I had an instant group that I could pick their brains. Not so with an agency. I have a compliance department, but I have a person of one in my role. So it's important to be able, as questions come up, as new developments occur, you want to have benchmark your practices against others in the industry. You need to develop that peer network. There are different organizations that do that, and I don't know if there's any one size fits best. But being able to have those communications and use others that have maybe been in the same situation before is really going to be critical between doing something the right way and the wrong way.
Now, I think that's a really good point. And it's there's just so much out there that it can quickly become overwhelming. And to build that network of not only resources like, ACA or especially accountrecovery.net, just finding those places where you can go, but even that can become overwhelming. But it's having those peers that you can talk to say, what are you thinking about as it relates to the, the new CFPB rule, or what are you thinking as it relates to whatever. And so I think that's key, and it's a great way to issue spots. I've done it for years, reaching to outside counsel a lot of times just to see if I can, have a few minutes about what they're thinking about. And then just even starting to build that peer group. So I think those things are really, really important. There's organizations out there that will also help you. If you want to, and all of a sudden you find yourself as a lucky participant of being eligible to be examined by the CFPB, no reason to start from ground zero and figure it all out on your own. You can use organizations that can help you do that. Law firms are great for that piece to come in and help with the CFPB readiness. And then there's outside auditing organizations that are out there, but it really comes down to what's your size and to Michael's, I think, original statement, which was focused on risk. What kind of risk are you looking at? Are you large enough now that you're getting close to the CFPB, or do you have concerns because, you're HIPAA compliant and that exposure is significant if there's a breach? And understanding what those risks are and figuring out a way to mitigate those risks is as much as possible. So, which is just good business, right? Understanding what the risks are, how you can mitigate them, how you can build controls and stuff into that piece. And that all comes down to your size and exposure. So good conversation on that piece.
Absolutely. One of the risks that we haven't...
Yeah, go ahead, Michael. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, one of the risks that we haven't touched on that is out there as you get larger and larger that a lot of people don't necessarily have on their radar screen is just the HR risk. We employ people, and people get hurt. There's work comp risk. But more importantly, there's, things go on in the workplace. We talked about the Me Too, but there's all sorts of items that can trip you up if you aren't really prepared for it. So another kind of mentor or at least someone you can visit with, you need to make sure you get kind of linked up with someone who really knows how to deal with letting someone go, doing it in a way that will, allow yourselves to defend yourselves if you need to, but also doing it in a way that doesn't necessarily create a record that can come back to bite you from a compliance standpoint with respect to why you're letting this person go. Just kind of delicately leave it at that.
Excellent. I just want to jump in for a second. Thanks to Dawn from PDC Flow. Everybody should be seeing the presentation now. Clearly, she's not having the technical difficulties I was, so thank you for that. I also wanted to just say a few words about the sponsor of today's webinar. PDC Flow's Payment Hub offers a single platform for accounts receivable teams to quickly send an invoice, collect a credit, debit, or ACH payment, and obtain a signature in one simple and secure workflow. The software offers text, email, chat, and IVR payment channels, a customizable online payment portal, and robust reporting ideal for debt collection agencies, medical billing companies, hospitals, and healthcare organizations. Programming and customer operations for PDC Flow's national client base have been completed in-house in Ogden, Utah, since the company's founding in 2003. I want to thank Don, Hannah, and the team at PDC Flow for sponsoring today's webinar and for sharing the presentation so that everybody can see it. We do have a couple of questions that have come in. I'm going to hold off on those for a minute because I wanted to bring up another conversation topic and see what everyone has to say. It seems to me, and again, I'm just an outsider, so by all means, correct me if I'm wrong, but many companies and many agencies are at a point where they can't say no to something when it's being presented to them as helping them be more compliant. So I'm curious if there's any advice that you may have for how an agency can determine if it has too many or not enough resources and or staff dedicated to compliance today.
Well, I'll start. I think that basically when you have your compliance program, you put compliance measurements in place, and you can check by the measurements as to whether it's working. I also, in my experience, I think some companies make a mistake in thinking that, you know, like in the collection industry, it's all about revenue, and compliance or the compliance department or the compliance person is seen as a cost. But actually, if your compliance program is working, it should be saving you money. You'll have less lawsuits, you'll have less pre-suit demands. It's been my experience anyway, that these things will happen if your compliance program is working.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. You know, spending money on risk management is hard to see the benefit. I mean, lawsuits, you got a lawsuit, you got to defend yourself, you've got to get it resolved. You can see it. But, the risk management on the front end of things are hard dollars sometimes for, you know, owners to spend. It's kind of like putting a new roof on your house. You have to do it. Otherwise, you know, you can save the money. Eventually, it's going to catch up to you. So you just have to be intellectually honest with yourself and say, yeah, this is worthwhile spending. Embrace it.
Sure. I always use the analogy, you know, you always want to have insurance, but you never want to have to use your insurance. And I think compliance is similar. You hope that, and it's never going to be a profit center in the company. Well, we all understand that, and almost no, HQ functions are. I think that there is a business plan to be put in place, as Laura mentioned, on the savings for having an effective compliance program or a compliance management system in place. I think it's definitely there. I would recommend, people who their primary duty is compliance within an organization, there are other ways to demonstrate value to your organization, more so than just seeing number of lawsuits dropping or number of consumer complaints dropping, some of those other internal SLAs you might have established. One thing I like to do, and we deal with healthcare collections, and our clients, these healthcare providers, they have their own very sophisticated compliance programs in place. And I want to be able to liaise with my counterpart at our clients, if it's a hospital system, what have you, and have one, there's an extra communications channel there in case something needs to be, have an end around, we have that established, but also just to demonstrate to clients and prospective clients, you all value compliance. You all value doing it the right way and staying out of trouble. We share that value. And being able to have those candid conversations to meet a client at those topics that they deem important. You know, we're going to do things the right way and not only keep ourselves out of trouble, but we're going to keep you out of trouble too. So I think, you know, a good compliance officer is lending value, not just to operations and showing, you know, we're going to minimize our risk profile, but also to sales, for instance, and we're actually going to help client services and hit our bottom line that way.
And I think that's a great point. I mean, it's hard to prove a negative. And that's a lot of times what we're doing. We're preventing stuff from happening. So usually during review time, I always say, I prevented 250 lawsuits this year. And they're like, well, how did you do that? And how can you prove that? And I can't. So it's kind of the running joke of how many lawsuits I've stopped or, you know, how many CFPB exams I haven't had to have or those kind of things. But it can be very measurable. So most of our clients would have audits. You know, one of the things we can do to show value is not only that we're able to respond on time, but we have no repeat findings, which then helps with the business, right? No repeat findings means you get to keep the, you know, the forward flow that you have, maybe even increase some of your market share because you're more compliant. And you can sell that to your customers, to Judd's point. What are their concerns? What are their pain points? And how can you focus on those things for them so that they don't worry about those things and they keep it up at night? I think right now we're at a very interesting time in this industry because of the CFPB rule and the potential use for new technology. And I think this could be a very dramatic shift in the compliance role as, you know, there's maybe one case on email. There's a ton of cases on TCPA and that kind of stuff. But how are we going to use this new technology, right, that's available to us? And that's really where the compliance position can really show some value. You can say, look at, you know, talking to outside counsel, here's what we've seen from a litigation front. So here's how we can bulletproof ourselves here or, you know, make ourselves as compliant as possible. Here's how we can start to use those technologies. So I think there's going to be this shift. It's an opportunity shift to be able to say, if you're strong in compliance, then you're going to be able to understand what the risks are. For bringing on these new technologies, and then how do you mitigate and control for those risks? Because you're going to have that program in place already. And I think it's a pretty exciting time to be in the compliance space because of that opportunity. And so I think that's a great way for us to show additional value. I think getting back to Mike's question, at the end of the day, it really comes down to risk tolerance. Right. And it's going to ownership, and that starts at the very top. What's your risk tolerance and making sure that people understand what that risk tolerance is, because that's going to drive what your program is. And the way to eliminate all risk is not to be in the business at all. And that's nobody's going to do that piece. Right. So that's on one end of the spectrum to being on the other is we're going to go until they catch us is on the other end, which is your bad players. And agencies are usually somewhere in the middle. Some are more conservative on something because that's a higher risk to them, and others are on the others. But if you understand what those risks are to the business owners and what they really are concerned about and to your clients, and then you can start to build towards that, that's a great way to show value because you're focusing on the things that are most important to them. And then you can work in those other things that you're getting for your mentor groups or from outside counsel and say, okay, here's really what we're going to try to implement this year and give yourself some goals. The CFPB wants to see programs that are evolving and growing, and regulators want to see that piece and clients want to see that. So it's like, how do we continue to evolve the program? It's not write policies and procedures and you're done. It's that next evolution and that next one on top of that. So compliance is like everything else in this space. It's going to continue to evolve, and that's how we can show our value is continue to build the things that we need to be able to build to be able to be in this space and then make them better over time. So exciting time to be in compliance.
Now I'm going to ask a panel of lawyers and compliance experts this question. I'm fully prepared to get a great lawyer answer in that it depends. but I'm wondering, is there a benchmark, a ratio, or some way for an agency to kind of assess you know, their compliance resources, whether they have enough or they're spending enough relative to the size of their agency. I know it's probably not, you know, something that's, you know, there's a hard and fast figure, but I'm wondering if there's just a way for agencies to kind of figure out whether they're in the ballpark in terms of how much they're spending versus what others are or what they should be spending.
You know, I thought about that question, Mike. I think a listener needs to look at it in from the other direction, and that is, you know, list out what those compliance responsibilities or priorities are for your organization. What do you need to do? What functions need to be in place? And from that, I think you can determine, you know, what level of resources are necessary to achieve those. I don't know, you know, the other panelists might have a different opinion, but I don't know of a particular rule of thumb on like number of full-time employees and ratioing a department with that. I think it really just depends on the type of business lines you run, the type of organization you have, to some extent, what jurisdictions you work in. I'd be hesitant, and I'm going to go back to that lawyer answer. It depends. I'd be hesitant to have a bright line number on anything like that. I think it's a better approach to say we have to do X, Y, Z. Therefore, there are different ways to achieve that. Some agencies might need to staff up for that. Others will invest in technology as opposed to individuals or people. There are a lot of different ways to get to the finish line, and you just need to look at what works best for your organization. And I think to kind of make that assessment, you know, go back to your peer group, look at what other similar agencies are doing successfully or not successfully, and use that information in a critical way to determine what's best for you.
I think if you're getting a lot of lawsuits, you're not putting enough time and resources into compliance. If you're on the low end of lawsuits or claims, you're probably doing pretty good. That's just a little, you know, kind of a way to look at it. But I will say, even with that, sometimes a smaller agency, because they just don't have as many contacts, they're not as exposed to risk just because of that quantity. But when they do hit where a consumer goes to a consumer lawyer and they look at something that's done, I'll get a call that will say, so we've been using that letter for 23 years and we've never gotten sued on it, but you know, it's got a glaring violation in it. I just recommend they go out and buy a lottery ticket. So sometimes it's the fact that there aren't any claims doesn't necessarily mean that they've got a clean bill of health. You really should think about, you know, engaging perhaps and having, you know, some sort of a mini audit where you can come have someone come out from the outside and look through how things are going. But I don't think there's a hard and fast rule on that. If you think about it from a CFPB audit standpoint, what they're looking for are good policies and procedures, good training, and a good continuous improvement loop that, you know, will look at any problems where you do, you know, stub your toe, figure out if it's a one-off type of thing or if it's a systemic problem that you need to change a new policy, a new procedure with new training. And if you've got all those pieces in place, along with the kind of resources we've been talking about, where you've got open eyes to what's happening in the industry and what's impacting our industry, you should be in pretty good shape. So you just have to ask yourself if you have all those things, and then who's in charge of it, who's responsible.
Yeah, and I think that's a great point, Michael. It's at a minimum, it's policies and procedures, training, you know, that monitoring and improvement program, and then, you know, just how you're handling consumer complaints, whether those are verbal or whether those are more formal, or you know, through an attorney general or Better Business Bureau. It's just what is that process? Because there is no hard and fast rule. I would, at some point, I might say it's easier if you're a large participant, you know, somebody who's averaging over $10 million a year in revenue, because then you are falling into the CFPB examination manual. And you just take that manual and say, okay, here's what we're going to get examined on. And how are we going to show that, you know, we have a policy or procedure, and how are we going to show that we actually follow it? Then you just go through the manual. But even that is not a surefire answer, because you can, to Judge's point, some of that can be done with technology, some of that can be done using outside resources. It was one of the things that CFPB really liked during our first examination is that the company I worked for had gone out to a third party just to get that assessment and to say, okay, where are our areas of opportunity and what can we do to fix those? And then that was one of the first things that we provided. You know, there was an internal discussion about should we provide that or not, but we were able to show here's where we were when we had this assessment done and here's what we did to improve. And then we want to continue to improve. And that's what shows, you know, regulators, clients, the CFPB, that you're trying, right? And this is new or you're of certain size. And so it's like, how do we continue to be able to show that we want to do the right things and doing those outside assessments and making your program stronger? And those kind of things are what is needed. But at a minimum, you know, it's nothing really exciting. It's policies and procedures. It's training, monitoring and auditing, and then just your response to complaints. If you can get those four elements based upon your size, you're probably in a good starting spot. And you can use the other things like you talked about, Michael, triggers such as additional lawsuits or maybe a spike in complaints, or you're seeing trending in certain things that you're saying that you may want to take a look at it and potentially change.
I also think it's also like good to communicate with your compliance person or department too, because like, you know, especially if your company is growing, you know, obviously if you have more collectors, you're probably going to get more disputes in. Attorneys might write in more disputes, but again, like Mike was saying, it's whether or not you're getting lawsuits. But, you know, if your compliance department is handling the disputes, you might want to check in. I know a lot of systems can be automated if they're like the generic ones, but some disputes you really need a human to actually read it. So you want to make sure that they're handling them in a timely manner and getting the request for verification back to them timely and things like that, so it doesn't get you in trouble. But I agree with everything that everybody else said. It's just, you know, it's kind of common sense, but I do think that because compliance is seen as a cost, the communication sometimes is lacking. It's just like, oh, they'll deal with it, you know. And it's sometimes, you know, as you're growing, you might want to check in and say, you know, how are you handling these? Are, you know, is your team, or are you able to handle all this still, you know? And then if the person says, no, you know, I think I need someone part-time, I need some help, you know, because on top of that, the compliance officer is also going to have to keep up with the policies and procedures and, you know, and keep writing new ones as you grow. So you got to keep that in mind too. Like we said in the beginning, you wear more than one hat. So I think communication is also important.
Great point.
Yes, absolutely. I'm curious, we've only got a few minutes left. I'd like to, you know, let's take this conversation and sort of turn it forward looking. So, you know, everyone can pull out their crystal ball or their magic eight ball or whatever they use to accurately predict winning lottery numbers every week. We've got this proposed rule from the CFPB. We've got this compliance officer position that's continuing to evolve and will continue to evolve. So, you know, looking ahead to the future, how do you foresee, you know, we've talked a little bit about privacy and the impact that might have on the responsibilities going forward, but are there other changes that are on the horizon for the compliance officer's role within an arm industry company? Do you think the continued progress of a debt collection rule is going to have any impact? If so, what? But maybe just sort of offer what people who are listening to the panel should be looking for, should be preparing for, that might be, that might be sort of coming down the road. Does anyone want to go first? I'll leave that one open to everybody.
I just think
this is good. Go ahead, Laura.
I was just going to say, I think for like, you know, I think the cyber, attacks and protecting personal health care information is going to be a real important issue, especially certain states are starting to enact certain requirements and laws. So I think you're going to, like, the the compliance officer is going to have to start really pay attention to state specific things. And like someone had mentioned before, the ACA is really good at updating and keeping us abreast of any changes within state laws, as well as, you know, how the CFPB rule will affect it. But I'm hoping that it makes things a little bit more clear as to how to do things and what's acceptable, what's not acceptable. Texting, chatting, all of that, you know, people are doing. So it'd be nice to have some guidance and some backup to say, yes, we followed this procedure exactly as you laid it out, and, you know, and hopefully get some protection from that. But like you said, I don't have a crystal ball.
You know, I kind of see the proposed rule, it'll be requiring changes in every organization, yes, but, you know, for good or bad, the final rule will come out, we'll absorb those changes, and we'll move on. I don't really see the new rulemaking to be like a strategic shift in compliance officers or compliance programs, per se. We'll just incorporate something new in a variety of different ways, such as other communications channels, and move on and modernize. I really think compliance officer, looking forward, how it's going to morph is it's going to broaden the responsibilities. So in a couple of different ways, as we're getting less, well, not necessarily less, but there's, I think the focus is going to be multidimensional between, federal regulators and state regulators. State collection boards, attorneys general are becoming a lot more involved in regulation, where they, for right or wrong, might see a vacuum in federal regulation. There's going to be something to deal with, and that's going to be a lot of different jurisdictions and a lot of different rules. It's going to require a compliance officer to really amp the sophistication level to be able to navigate that if you have operations in a lot of different states. We mentioned before, I think responsibilities are going to go outside of just, strict collections law and collections regulations into other areas, be it, human resources, data security standards, partnering with your director of HR, partnering with your chief information officer or your IT department, and really getting those multi-departmental approaches to a lot of different areas, I think is going to be necessary as well. And I also see, I see compliance officers having to move towards how compliance is approached for other industries. Honestly, like an example would be moving towards more of a SOX, a Sarbanes-Oxley type compliance set of obligations, where you're looking into security controls and maintenance of electronic records, and establishing change control processes and things of that nature. I think that's been originally relegated to public companies, but those principles are going to hold true for everybody. And I really see collections, compliance officers having to take on that hat as well and moving in that area. I guess my takeaway from a philosophical standpoint is responsibilities for compliance officers are going to be broader in the next 5 years. They're going to be broader in the sense that collections law is just becoming more multifaceted, but also they're having to pull in a lot of different areas outside of that.
And I would add to that, the point where what we've seen, just in the space, it started off as, compliance was less disciplined. We were doing things in the right way, but we just weren't documenting them, and then sort of entered that reactive phase, if you will, where we had incidents where we may have a client audit or a state regulator ask for something or a complaint, and then we would fix it. And then you start to get towards that end where eventually you're more proactive. You're doing your own internal testing and monitoring to make sure things that are happening. It's that evolution, if you will. And then eventually it gets to this very end stage where we've seen it in industries like manufacturing, where you're trying to get to zero incidences and continuous improvement, because that's really where the competitive advantage is going to come from in the long term. As it becomes more regulated, we see more litigation and those things, the competitive advantage is to have less lawsuits because you're doing it the right way. And you have client, you can sell compliance in various areas, and that's what really gets people excited about your company. Not only can you do the job, right, but you do it with less complaints, less lawsuits, And so those are the things that are going to excite the clients going forward. And that's just kind of the evolution of this compliance, this role. We're going to see different, there's always going to be something new that's coming. More employment issues, maybe. I think definitely information security. I mean, we saw an agency, you know, this year have an incident and it's basically gone. So those are bet the company kind of situations, and that's huge risk. So how can you mitigate that risk and the things you can do? And the things that we're doing out here in California with, you know, Consumer Privacy Act, you know, that's going to happen across the nation. New York's already talking about theirs, and New Jersey's got theirs, and New Mexico's working on theirs. So we're going to have this, again, this patchwork of things that we have to do for consumers as it relates to their personal data and how they have the right to be forgotten and all those things. And that's going to lead to new litigation. And so it's going to be a continual evolving. It's at some point, it'd be great to say, okay, we've got all of our policies and procedures written, we're done. That's not ever going to happen. It's just going to, we'll be less focused on policies and procedures because we have a process for that going forward. We're looking at all these other things and figuring out how do we create policies and procedures for this, and what are the next things we do. But I want to make sure that Michael gets a chance to wrap us up on that.
No, and I appreciate that. And I would just echo that, your comment on the data security. You can lose your entire business if data breach happens. So if I'm in compliance or in any company, I would just do everything I can to make sure I've got that all locked down. But what I'm hearing and the theme that comes through all of this is that as a compliance officer, you truly are the proverbial drinking from a fire hose. There is so much risk out there, some of it more important than others, some of it more risky than others, if you will, and what the impact it can have for your agencies. So you will be unable to continue to take on more and more of these risks and be able to be the master of all of them. You're going to have to develop a team approach, and whether that's using outside folks outside your agencies that are your conduits for, you know, whatever the particular area is, but you're going to have to really sit down and maybe spend a week or so figuring out who are the people that are on my team, whether they're inside the agency or outside the agency, and then basically delegate responsibility and accountability to those people so that you, as the kind of lead, the chief compliance officer, can sleep at night. That's the goal of all of this. Manage that risk so that you can sleep. Company is remains compliant and profitable, and we've all done our jobs.
Well said. Well said.
Absolutely. Well, before I let everybody go, one last time, I want to thank Laura, Tim, Judd, and Michael. I really appreciate everybody, you know, each of you taking the time and to share your thoughts and to participate. This was an awesome conversation. So panelists, thank you very much. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Everybody
thanks
else,
everyone that enjoyed it.
Yes, absolutely. Everybody else, thanks for listening. Thanks again to PDC Flow for sponsoring today's webinar. Everyone can go to www.pdcflow.com to learn more about the company. A final reminder to take a minute and fill out the feedback survey for today's webinar to help identify topics and speakers you want to hear from. A recording of this event will be posted by the end of today to accountsrecovery.net, the webinar recordings page, so you can look there for that. And I hope everybody enjoys the rest of your day. Thank you very much. Everybody take care.
You too. Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.